Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeth. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. And now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeth, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Oh, and good morning to you on this rather blustery, rainy, windy day. Winnie the Pooh would be so happy with a day like today.
Oh, you know what? I saw on social media, somebody said that I finally figured out why we call May the month of May. It's because it may rain, it may hail, it may snow, it may be sunny.
Oh, it may be sunny. I love that. I'm going to have to borrow that sometime. Yes. Perfect, Dr. Umeth.
Although my favorite May explanation comes from the stage play Camelot.
Okay.
And the song, The Lusty Month of May.
Oh, of course
the
you would love that one.
Yes, you may.
Yes. And now our engineer is probably trying to find that song and see if it is a song. So, welcome to Leading Edge Medicine. We have a full studio today. Dr. Jerry Mixon here, Dr. Samira Umeth, and we have a special guest doctor from our longevity clinic in Tacoma, Dr. Jimenez. So, hello. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yes, you've been with Longevity for quite a while, but this is your first time on the radio with us.
That's right.
Wonderful. Okay. So let me throw that phone number out right before we get some medical updates, and we will dive right into your questions and your health concerns. If you've been wanting to get through to us, hey, try earlier than later at the end of the show. We want to make sure we get your questions in. Our number we're using today is 206-644-6006. Okay, Dr. Mixon, what is making medical news today?
Well, let's see. What do we have? Well, the worst...
Other than the fact that you're tall, brilliant, and handsome, what is
yes.
making
yes.
yes. But wait a minute. Is that news? I thought that was just kind
no,
of a
that
given.
Is a fact. Yes, that is a fact.
Well,
yes.
Okay. Yeah. No, we do have a little bit of a negative spin on things, and that 20% of colon cancer is now being found in people under age 50. That is a change from the olden days when I was a lad in medicine, where you never expected it in under 60. Then it moved down to the 50s, and now it is below 50. Making the recommendation that we start doing colonoscopies at 45.
Indeed.
But now we are seeing some fatal cancers in people in their 30s, which is a real change.
Yes, it is.
You know, never used to see colon cancer in people in their 30s.
Right.
But and it's tending to be a more aggressive tumor than the late life colon cancer. So that's kind of discouraging. The question is why?
Right.
My guesses are that it's a shift in our immune response. You know, the immune system is designed to destroy everything that gets in our body that is not us. Mm-hmm. It's a self versus non-self. And everybody undergoes mutations of cells from time to time to a malignant cell. And then your immune system is supposed to find and destroy that cell before it becomes an overt cancer. So we almost all have malignant transformations. Our immune systems protect us. But the combination of increasing weight, because the heavier you are, the fatter you are, the more your immune system shifts towards inflammation and loses the capacity to fight infections and destroy tumors. Mm-hmm. That's why we think that about 22% of all the cancer in America is caused by being overweight.
Wow.
And we are now seeing overweight people in their teens and even preteen years, which is, you know, a big, big change over the last 30 years. It's an epidemic of fat kids. Yeah. And their immune systems are not going to be as good. The other problem is muscle is not just for show. Muscle is a very powerful immune booster. And so as we have a sedentary lifestyle, we have less muscle and more fat. And that combination is impairing our ability to find and kill tumors of all types.
Yeah. I tell my patients all the time, I go, you know, losing the fat is not about making you super sexy. It's about reducing your risk for serious chronic diseases.
Yes.
And preserving the brain.
Yes. Yeah, that increasing weight is going to raise your average blood sugar, which means the A1C is going up. Mm-hmm. And a person at 5.7 is losing brain volume at twice the rate of someone at 5.2. And when you get your glucose, you know, A1C up to 6 and 7 and 8 and 9,
yeah.
Well, that's why diabetics have a 300% increased risk of dementia.
Yeah.
Their brains are simply shrinking much faster than people with lower average blood sugars.
Yeah. And in colon cancer, you know, obviously the weight issue, the sedentary lifestyle, probably a combination of what we're eating too, because our diets have changed over time. They are less, more holistic, more into processed foods and meat and burnt foods that are pre-carcinogenic. And so a combination of factors has led to this unfortunate event of increased colon cancer risk at a younger age group. Now, you can test, but in the past, we would start colonoscopy at age 50, so we missed a whole bunch of them. Now they've lowered that age to age 45, but still, there are other things you can do, stool tests and other genetic tests. If you are at high risk, please talk to your provider about getting those screenings in so that they pick it up early, because this is treatable if it's picked up early.
Yes.
Yes.
And for young people, you know, if I was 40 or so, and if I had a family history of colon cancer, I'd be doing one of the stool tests, one of the genetic stool tests, where they just give you little swabs. All you do is rub the swab on some stool, put it in the envelope, mail it to them. They do genetic testing on the sample and tell you whether there are proteins consistent with a tumor being excreted in your stool.
Yep. I'd really recommend it with anyone who has any kind of gastrointestinal disease, thinking about things like Crohn's and ulcerative colitis. They have a turnover of cells much greater than the normal average person.
Well, yeah. They do. You're right. Absolutely.
They really do. And, you know, for gut health becoming such an important aspect, you know, the gut being considered your brain literally in the body, and so gut microbiome being very important, we do a lot more stool analysis to find out what the gut microbiome is and how to help optimize your gut health to optimize your general well-being as well. Mm-hmm. It's not a matter of, oh, my God, I'll just take a probiotic.
Right.
You know, in fact, not all probiotics are equal, and sometimes you don't need a probiotic. That may not be the right thing for you.
Mm. Well, and it's always kind of bugged me that the primary probiotics that you buy are lactobacillus.
Yeah. Yep.
These are bacteria that grow in milk, you know, which is why we see them in yogurt and cheese and so on. But the primary bacterial load in the gut is not lactobacillus. Mm. Lactobacillus is a tiny percentage of bugs in our gut. Mm-hmm. You know, the real source for the bugs in our gut is supposed to be soil, the dirt.
Mm.
You know, our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents and far back, they grew their food in local gardens. Yeah. Every family had a garden.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you would harvest your garden.
Yes.
And guess what? You did not sterilize it.
Yeah.
No. You know, I remember as a kid, I'd go out and I'd pull up radishes and turnips and tomatoes.
Yeah. Wipe it on your shirt and take a bite.
It off. Well, I usually wiped it on my pants leg.
Yeah.
But yes. And you eat it. And there's a fair bit of bacteria there.
I know.
You know, now they're grown in industrial farms. Before they ship them, they wash them thoroughly and get as much of the dirt and soil and bacteria off as they can. They ship it to the warehouse where they're generally washed a second time. Then they get to the store where they're washed yet again.
Oh, yeah.
And they're put in these bins with the sprayers, that are always running fresh water across them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you take them home and, you know, Ms. Housewife says, oh, yes, I'll take this to the sink. You know, and she washes it yet again. And then you wonder, well, why don't I get the normal bacteria?
Yeah.
Well, because you didn't wipe it on your pants and eat it. That's why.
Right. That's right. Yes.
You washed the damn thing
eat
five times.
Yeah, I think I traumatized one of my children one time when I was cutting something and I didn't wash it. And they go, what? And I said, well, if there's a bug in it, it's a protein.
There you go.
You know, protein was. And now I find that my kids are actually okay with just picking something from the garden, like herbs or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll just bring it in and cut it and put it in the salad. And I go, you didn't wash that? And they go, what?
My salad.
Good
greens.
Healthy bugs out there. Come on, a little protein.
Yeah, a little protein, yeah.
Okay. So eating mud pies, not a bad thing these days.
No. Although some of the things small children eat are concerning.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yes, yes. I do recall graphically my oldest son. We had a dog, and as dogs do, they poop in the yard.
Oh.
And he found an old piece of dog poop, and he walked in the house with it in his hand like a lollipop.
Oh, boy.
Oh, that's gross.
It was really a good fertilizer
for the yard, but not for your
goodness,
son.
Yes, no.
Yes.
Kids. He survived. Yeah. He's now, he's now 52 years old.
He doesn't do that anymore, I'm sure.
Hopefully he's no longer eating dog poop out of the yard.
Oh, sure, he appreciates you sharing the story,
yes,
though.
Yes, sure, yeah. Oh, boy. Okay. We're learning a lot in our medical news update
today. That's right.
Yeah. Okay. And any
healthy dogs, healthy kids, they survive one another. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Okay. That's right. If your kid is getting sick a lot, get him a pet. Get him a dog. Get him outside.
And don't look too closely at what they're doing.
And that's right. Oh, boy. We're going to take a break right now and back with your questions and your phone calls. Phone lines are wide open right now. Don't wait until the very end of the show. Call right now and we'll get you right in at 206-644-6006 for Leading Edge Medicine. Again, our number to get through live today is 206-644-6006. We'll be right back.
Oh, oh, well, I'm falling in love again. Oh, 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 oh. Many's the time I've been too tired. Many's the time I've been stung. Many a honey took all of my money, but that was when I was much younger. Made up my mind to be careful. Made up my mind to beware. I was all right until Saturday night. I'm in a gown with the goldenest hair. Oh, oh, well, I'm falling in love.
And we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. I'm looking around. We don't have any golden hairs in here.
No.
Yours is the closest.
No, actually.
Well, more reddish.
Well,
yeah,
actually,
maybe.
Now the blondest of the bunch.
Yes, you are
the blondest. I'm artificial, but.
Yeah. Oh, Dr. Mixon here in the studio. Dr. Umat joining us, and also special guest doctor, Dr. Jimenez from our longevity clinic in Tacoma. So you're going to get some fans that have said, oh, you're going to be on the radio. This is the week.
Yeah, she's been with us a few years now. She's become very popular in Tacoma. Her schedule is so packed solid. It's taken us months to get her on the radio show.
Yay.
But here she is finally. Welcome,
finally.
Laura. So
Thank
happy
you guys
to have you
so
here.
Much.
Yeah.
Yes. Love that you're here with us today. Mm-hmm. All right. And we are going to jump into some questions. Here is our number. If you haven't joined us in a couple months, we have a new number we're using right now. It's 206-644-6006. And we're going to head to Tacoma. Maybe you even know this one. It's John from Tacoma. Hi there, John. Welcome to our show.
Good morning to you all.
Good morning.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Well,
how can we help?
I have a raging CRP. Mm. It's 12. Mm-hmm. Now, my background is being treated for cancer, presently being injected with Lupron, and I'm taking darolutamide because my PSA started to go up.
Okay.
What can I do about this? I mean, is this, should I expect this when I have cancer?
Yes, you should. It's an inflammatory marker. And, you know, there is inflammation from your body responding to the cancer and trying to fight it, to kill it. And also, of course, the Lupron is preventing you from making the anabolic hormones, the testosterone and dehydroepiandrosterone and so on. And when you shut all of those down, you lose some of the vascular dilatation, the increased blood supply that allows you to fight infections more robustly. So are you developing any arthritic pains, joint pains, muscular pains as they've blocked down your...
Occasionally, I feel like I have something like in my elbow. Right now, it seems to mostly be gone, returning occasionally.
Okay. See, when I see a high sensitivity CRP up around 12 or 15, my first thought is arthritis, because that's the most common cause. Arthritic changes, that inflammation will give you a high CRP. And the secondary one is associated with the joints, the bursitis, ligamentous inflammation and stuff. And then down the road is a cancer. But you see high CRPs in most cancer patients now.
Okay. Well, then, there's no fire hose to dampen it down?
Well, there are some things we do, and it's always a matter of balance. You know, there. If you go on our website, type in to the search anti-inflammatory diet, and there is a dietary changes you can make that will result in less systemic inflammation. And then there are, of course, anti-inflammatory supplements you can take. One of the simplest ones is one that I happen to own, which is the Relief Factor. And anywhere from 2 to 4 packets a day, depending on how much inflammation you're having. And absent that, you can get things like high-dose resveratrol and turmeric. These are also potent anti-inflammatories. Berberine is another good anti-inflammatory that you can use. I guess that's pretty much where we are as far as, inflammation.
Well, I'm on a statin right now.
Okay.
My total cholesterol is 104.
Mm. All right, so it's quite low.
Yes, and my HDL is 40. It had been higher before.
Sure.
And the calculated LDL is 51.
All so, right. Yeah, so you're not going to die of heart disease in the near future, that's for sure.
Okay, well, that's the best news from this call. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no. So your cholesterol is in great shape, but something is causing some systemic inflammation, and that's what we're looking at trying to address.
The statin also could be causing some of the muscle pain that he's experiencing. Mm-hmm. So depending upon how high your dose is, if there's room to lower the dose, always speak to your cardiologist and whoever prescribed it first, but it might reduce some of your... Oh, and also CoQ10. I love CoQ10 whenever you're on a statin. So if you're not taking CoQ10, it'll help reduce some of the muscle aches and pains that you're experiencing.
I am taking that for having listened before.
Good.
To the program.
Good.
Super.
So let's see. So my cholesterol down at a total cholesterol down at 104 is okay.
It's a little low.
It's a little lower than I normally try to drive it. Mm-hmm. But I think that probably gives you room to lower your statin dose.
I mean, we don't know your full history, right? So we don't know the cardiovascular.
And that's why you need to talk to the cardiologist.
Right, and just see if there's room where they can lower the dose.
The dose of the statin, rosuvastatin or whatever it is, it's 5 milligrams. I think that's as low as you go for the most part.
Yeah. You have cardiac history? Have you ever had a heart attack or stroke?
Nope. Nope. I have a lot of PVCs, a ton of them.
Okay. Yeah, but statins are not going to lower the incidence of PVCs.
No, they're not. So I don't know. I'm not quite sure what if he's never had an MI, because statins don't prevent first MIs.
Yeah.
They lower the risk of a second MI.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a small dose, it makes me feel like I don't even know if it's needed. That's a good conversation to have with whoever prescribed it, though. Like, is this still something that's appropriate for me?
Because your numbers are so low, that just it surprises me that you're still on a statin with numbers that low.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, again, you know, my cardiologist doesn't read the same books that you do, I think.
Yep. Yes.
Yes.
So he's been taking it prophylactically for years. And that's the reason I started it prophylactically.
Okay.
Was an angiogram, and he said there's minimal luminal irregularities. Mm. So there is some sign of plaque in there, but it's minimal.
But it's minimal, okay. Well, you got minimal plaquing. You've got a very, very low LDL with a fairly robust HDL ratio. I don't see a good reason for the statin. My general philosophy is I like as little in the way of prescription drugs as I can use. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to discuss it with the guy that wrote it. We aren't on the radio going to tell you to stop it.
Yep.
But I think it's a conversation you need to have.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate
it. You're welcome, sir. Take care. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Okay.
Good luck to you, sir.
Yes, thank you for calling, John. We're going to take a quick break here just a bit early, and then we have Joe on the line. We have room for your call, too, and your questions at 206-644-6006. Again, that number is 206-644-6006. We'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine with you in just a moment. Stay right there, okay?
On a day like today, we pass the time away, writing love letters in the sand.
And we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Live in the studio. Hi there, my name is Lynette, along with Dr. Samiri Umat here, Dr. Jerry Mixon, and our special guest doctor from our Tacoma Longevity Clinic to answer your questions, Dr. Jimenez. So there we go. We've got three doctors here and lots of information, lots of medical knowledge, and I see all these laptops in here as well. So if you've got a question about your health or a recent diagnosis, maybe something you just don't understand that you're going through or some symptoms, you're like, oh, I don't know about this. Hey, give us a call. We'd love to talk with you at 206-644-6006. Those phone lines are open right now. We're going to head to Mount Vernon where all those tulips are blooming, looking beautiful. We have Joe calling. Hi there, Joe.
Hello, Joe.
Hello. Hello.
How can we help, sir?
I'm wondering what the current state of increasing insulin-producing cells in type 1 diabetics is. Mm-hmm. And I have some follow-up questions after
Type 1 diabetes.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, it is problematical. Research being done with engineered stem cells. Mm. And, you know, there is some evidence that stem cell transplants or stem cell rejuvenation with the engineered stem cells may well be of benefit. You know, there are people that are growing a whole lot more pancreatic beta cells now. Mm-hmm. So the research is encouraging. What we don't have is any FDA-approved therapies at this point. Mm-hmm. So the only real hope to get such a treatment right now is to wrangle yourself into one of the studies. And the NIH actually has a website in which you can look for studies that are being started and are recruiting. Mm-hmm. So you can go on and do put in some keywords such as pancreatic or type 1 diabetes and so on, and see what comes up on their website. And if there is a current study that's recruiting for patients, you can apply. The downside is you never know in advance if you'll be in the placebo group or the active treatment group. Mm-hmm. So, you know, because half the people get an active treatment and half get placebo. Although what will often happen is if you're initially in the placebo group and if the study is showing good results, they'll then go back and offer active treatment to the people that were in the placebo during the study.
Nice.
And let them then get their real treatment afterwards.
Okay.
Okay.
The follow-up question I have is, I noticed mm-hmm. you're referencing genetically modified or, you know, grown stem right. cells into yes. insulin-producing beta cells. But I found a research study from 2015 that I don't see any follow-up research for, mm-hmm. in which they took diabetic mice, they injected them with bone marrow stem cells, and then the mm-hmm. day after, they injected them with high-dose niacinamide. Mm-hmm. And it appears to promote differentiation into insulin-producing cells. And I wasn't sure if there was any follow-up research for that. That you were aware of.
Yeah, I have not seen a follow-up study on that. Yeah, there's a couple of issues. One is niacinamide is one of those things that we think improves pancreatic function in humans, which is why they were trying it in the mice, trying to differentiate those hematologic stem cells. Bone marrow stem cells can become almost any tissue, not quite, but they're very good at forming bone and ligament and cartilage and, in this case, pancreatic cells. So, you know, I understand the rationale behind it, but I'm not sure of any human studies that are being done in that right now. Mm-hmm. But it's not something I follow. You know, I've got a list of things that I tweak the literature almost a weekly basis, mm. looking for things that are in my professional bailiwick, which is obviously the aging process and mm-hmm. what we can do about it. And so I sometimes come across things in diabetes literature and so on, but when I do, it's serendipity. It's not because I'm looking for it. I've mm-hmm. only got so many hours in the day, and I've got my field of study. So I sometimes have things I can share, but not regularly. And this is one of those areas that's outside of my area.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So Dan Nelson's stem cell therapy, is that intramuscular or is that intravenous?
Neither one. No, it's it's interarticular mostly. What he'll do is he takes the stem cells out of your bone marrow, actually takes a bone marrow aspirate, spins it down, isolates the stem cells, and then depending on where your damaged tissue is, usually, you know, a meniscus or a cartilage in a joint, mm-hmm. he will use fluoroscopy to put a needle right there and then bathe that particular tissue in the stem cells and a PRP mixture. The PRP, the platelet-rich plasma, the platelets have 9 different growth factors. Mm-hmm. And so when those platelets rupture over the stem cell, they nourish the stem cells and help them to grow and to promote the healing.
And more of an anti-inflammatory impact.
So they have a very anti-inflammatory impact, yeah.
Okay.
Often the PRP alone will decrease pain significantly just by damping down the inflammation. Mm-hmm. So I know he uses PRP a lot with bursitis and so on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. You know, the only IV stem cells stuff that's being done commercially is Reardon down in Panama.
Yeah, outside of the United States.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there are some studies. I know University of Miami has an active stem cell modification program.
Okay.
And they grow adipose stem cells in the lab and get, you know, hundreds of millions of stem cells, and then they give them to elderly people intravenously. Mm. But that's part of their research studies on sarcopenia.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So. Right. No, the federal government here in the United States is very strict about that. Any modification of your own stem cells then makes it a new product, which is illegal to do.
Yes. Mm. Well, illegal to use.
To use.
You can make it, and then you can inject them into mice, just not into people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So be very careful of, you know, what you hear and what you get done.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that are promoting, you know, stem cells that from all sorts of sources, placental stem cells and so on. But there are no living stem cells in those preparations because mm-hmm. they're frozen.
Yeah.
Oh. And stem cells are fragile. When you freeze them, you kill them.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So you're giving people basically a broth that had stem cells in it, but what you're really giving them now are the exosomes and acellular vesicles that were produced by the stem cells. Mm-hmm. But there are no viable stem cells there. And what you're really hoping is that those acellular vesicles will stimulate your own stem cells to be more active. Mm-hmm. Oh. And because we all have stem cells in our tissues.
Right.
As we age, we have fewer stem cells and they are less and less robust. And the hope is by giving people placental acellular vesicles and exosomes, you can stimulate your own stem cells. And, you know, indeed, there are a few of us, like me, that do intravenous exosomes and acellular vesicles for ourselves periodically. And I'm usually doing it about 3 or 4 times a year. But it's about $4,500 a pop.
I do wonder if that would help with a type 1 diabetic. I mean,
if
it had that potential.
Yeah.
Right.
It might. But again, you can't promote it for that because we, you know, nobody knows. And
we don't know what your body's going to do with
that's
those
right. exosomes. Yeah. You know, I'm doing my hormone therapies. Then I do the dasatinib and suppress my senile cells. And then I try to kick my remaining elderly cells into high gear by using the youthful exosomes intravenously to just get them through my entire body.
Yeah.
That's a little more aggressive program than most people want to do.
Right.
and more expensive than most people want to do, you know, because they, you know, you got our regular program and then you've got the senescent cell and then you've got another, you know, $16,000 or so in the acellular vesicles. So that, you know, that kicks my personal program up in the neighborhood of 20 some thousand a year.
Yeah. Wow.
So that's not for everyone, you know, but I figured I own the company.
There you go.
I'll do it.
You can do it.
Type 1 diabetes is really tough though. So I feel like they're always looking for.
They are.
You know, how can I? Because it impacts their life so much.
Yeah, it really does. But, and of course, that's why the research folks are engineering stem cells
right.
specifically to give them a predilection to become beta cells.
Beta cells,
And then injecting those into the abdomen around the pancreas. They don't actually inject it into the pancreas because the pancreas, if you stir it up, it's going to really cause problems. But they actually put it peri-pancreatic so that they're getting a similar environment of the pancreas, because stem cells tend to become whatever they are around. So stem cells in muscle want to become muscle. Stem cells in blood vessels want to become hematologic cells. Stem cells around the pancreas, and preferably in the pancreas if you get away with it, want to become pancreatic tissues. So it's a fascinating area of study, but we just aren't there yet.
Right.
Okay. Ooh, lots of good questions today, and we've got more on the way. If you have a question for any of the doctors here, be part of our show at 206-644-6006. I know, I talk a little fast, so I'm going to give you that number again. It's 206-644-6006. When we come back, we're going to talk about sinus infections and diverticulitis. Yeah. Okay, that's next, right here on Leading Edge Medicine. Stay right there.
In every other song that I've heard lately, some fellow gets shot, and his baby and his best friend both die with him, as likely as not. In half of the other songs, some cats cry, are ready to die. We've lost most all of our happy people, and I'm wondering why. Let's thank
because they didn't come to Longevity Medical Clinic. That's why.
That's right, what a sad song. Oh, loving and living and laughing, and that's what we talk about at Longevity.
I do approve of that lovey-dovey.
Yes, yes. Welcome to the show, Leading Edge Medicine, on a wonderful day. It's rainy. I love the rain, so I don't get sad. I love it. I will go home and crack the windows just so I can hear it. Oh, boy.
That is the problem with the well-insulated houses.
Yes, you can't hear that composite. Rain.
No, you can't.
And I miss it.
That was one of the joys of a tin roof.
Yes.
In my youth down in the Carolinas, I mean, the houses were not well insulated. In fact, you could actually see cars go by in the cracks in the walls.
That's right. Yeah.
Wow.
And the only heat was a potbelly stove in the living room.
So there's that. However, you could hear the rain.
But you could hear the
hail.
And that tin roof, boy, it would just thunder with those summer thunderstorms.
Oh boy.
If it was too hot in the house, my grandfather and I would go down to the barn. And which again had a shed tin roof, and we would just lay out on those wooden slats where the stringers would string the tobacco, and sleep out there in the summer with a cooler breeze and the thunderstorms coming by.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It was lovely.
Love that. Sharing memories.
Now I'm affluent, and I have this big fancy house.
And you can't see the traffic from your living room.
And I can't hear the thunder unless it's got to be bad enough to shake the house for me to hear it in
that's right. It's like,
insulated place I'm in.
It's raining. What's up
with
that?
There were thunderstorms here the other day.
Yes, that's what I heard.
Yeah. It's 4 a.m. We had one big peal of thunder that just shook the whole house.
Yeah. Wow. It's like, what was that? All right. Well, we are going to head down to Maple Valley. I do not know if there is rain in Maple Valley today. Bob, you have some rain today?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Well, welcome to the show. How can we help you?
Okay, well, in mid-March, I came down with COVID, and it was kind of a mild case. I completely recovered in a couple weeks. But now, ever since then, the last couple of months, every few days, I seem to get this recurrent sinus infection. And so I wake up in the morning and really congested. The mucus is brown. And then it'll kind of clear up around lunch, and maybe towards later in the afternoon, if I have some mucus, it'll be kind of clear. And, I just keep going through this cycle for the last couple of months. And, I've had congestion early in the morning, but nothing quite like this. I've tried a neti pot and with the saline solution. And it doesn't really seem to help that much. So I don't know. I guess the brown means there's red blood cells there. I don't know whether this is bacterial or not, or what
fungal.
It might be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, about 30% of chronic sinus infections these days are fungal in origin, too. So I would go see your doctor in the morning, okay, when you're still kind of have the gunky colored stuff, and have them do both some cultures and some potassium hydroxide smears to see if you've got an active bacterial or fungal infection there, because the treatment would be very different.
That's right.
Very different medications for fungi than from bacteria. You know, it's not that unusual when you get an infection, a viral infection. The virus damages the mucus lining and suppresses the immune response, and then other organisms like bacteria and fungi can then get a foothold and start to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean you're still infected by the virus, but it means the virus damaged the tissue and set you up for
right.
the subsequent infection. And so you need to identify the organism so you know what to kill it with.
Is that something they can do right in his office, where they have to take a smear and send it out and get a result?
Depends on the office. I used to do potassium hydroxide smears in my office. I had a microscope, and I just put a little mucus and add the potassium hydroxide. It would dissolve everything except the fungi, and then you could see the fungi or the mycelium there. I suspect that, you know, since I was an old-fashioned country doctor, I did that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More I was a likely. Primary care, and I would send that stuff out.
Yeah. More
you
likely.
You didn't like to do that?
More likely the city doctors are going to send it all out.
Yes.
Yep. They'll probably take the smear and send it away.
Wow.
And it'll take them a few days to get a result.
But
okay, would the neti pot, it seems like if I had a little infection maybe in one of my sinuses, and by running the, you know, water and saline solution, it would spread it out through my entire sinus system.
Well, it's possible. You know, what will often happen is the neti pot will wash out the current mucus and clear out what's there at the moment. But saline is not very antibacterial or antifungal. You know, it's pretty innocuous. So it's not going to kill anything. It's just going to dilute what's there and possibly even spread it. So
yeah.
I'd say go get the smears, get the cultures, find out what's really growing there. Remember, one of Dr. Mixon's many aphorisms for medicine is, if you don't know what you're treating, the chances of treating effectively are poor.
Right.
Okay? Yeah. First diagnosis, then therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'll just throw this out because it is pollen season, and it could be something like allergies.
Could be.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't know until you know.
No. But again, the allergies, he didn't mention that those would have probably predated the viral infection. If this started after the virus, then I'd lean more towards a secondary bacterial or fungal. But who knows?
Yeah.
You can. It doesn't mean you didn't develop an allergy, but I just... playing the odds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're probably right.
It's a brown color.
Yeah.
It's a brown color of the mucus. What kind of a clue does that give you?
Well, healthy mucus is clear.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
And so if it's not clear, it's contaminated with something. And whether that's old blood, whether that's bacterial products or something from the from a fungus, I can't tell you on the radio. These are why we did smears and slides.
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, and then it seems to clear up through the day. So later in the afternoon, my mucus will be clear.
Yeah. And generally, you know, as you're drinking and getting more water in your system and getting hydrated, the mucus does get clear.
Right.
And you're basically washing out whatever colored stuff was there. But that doesn't mean it's not still there waiting to show up again the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
So once more, identify, get rid of it.
Okay. Yep. I'll make an appointment on Monday morning.
Okay.
There you go, Bob. Thank you.
And try to get a morning appointment when the stuff is most concentrated, okay?
Okay. All righty. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good to know. And so doctors, I mean, like you brought up pollen. What is the difference, you know, when you're going, okay, is it allergies? Is it a cold? It seems like so many of the symptoms, or is it a sinus infection? What is the difference?
Well, with allergies, it's seasonal.
Okay.
And then it's only with exposure, right?
So clear? If
yeah, usually it's clear.
Okay, if it's allergies and it's you're sneezing clear. And sore yeah. throat and all of that. And then how do you know if it's a cold? Maybe just a good old-fashioned cold.
And also, they are associated with other body symptoms, viral infections associated with other things.
Okay.
Mild achiness, light low-grade fever, something else. Doesn't have to be, but it can be.
It can be. Yeah. All right. Good questions. We are going to talk with one of our callers about diverticulosis in just a moment, so stay tuned for that. If you'd like to get through, you can. We have room for you on our phones right now, 206-644-6006. Okay, and we have just a minute and a half here to talk about longevity medical clinics. This is the place to go. This is where you need to come. This is why we are here, sponsoring Leading Edge Medicine. Because why, Dr. Mixon?
Well, because we want you stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, and happier.
Absolutely.
This getting old. You know, George Burns once said, you know, getting old is not for sissies.
Yeah. No.
Right.
Yeah.
The reality is that as we get old, natural, normal, slower, weaker, fatter, dumb, and sexless. That's what happens to us as we get old. If that's your goal in life, you don't need longevity. But if you don't like what time and gravity are doing to you, if you want to be stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, and sexier than you are now, you need to come to longevity and let us find out what's happening and fix it.
And do what so many have done already. Come in for that free health analysis appointment. What you need to do is make that appointment for two simple tests, a blood test and an in-body test. And you can do that by going to our website, lmclinic.com. That's lmclinic.com. There are longevity clinics near you in Linwood, Tacoma, and Kirkland. You can find the clinic closest to you, figure out the schedule, the time, the day that work best, and make your appointment. You can also call us at 866-86-YOUNG. We'll be back.
The preceding program was paid for by Longevity Medical Clinic and does not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of KPI management and staff. Stay tuned after the news for hour two.
KVI Seattle and KPLZ HD3 Seattle.
Streaming to the world at KVI.com. America's first conservative talk station. 570 KVI.